what follows in this paper is rather difficult. And I would like to take your view. Would you like to pass through this difficult passage or passages? It's like in gymnasium, you have done some exercise, and then comes a point where you have to do harder exercise. I would encourage you to take a harder exercise, but I need your consent. If you like to go to another topic, which is also a good topic, and go from easy to slightly difficult, then slightly difficult, then gradually we can come back to this again afterwards. So that is also another way. So there are two alternatives before you. You have done Plato sufficiently, you know, although it is only a few pages that you have read. What I have told you of Plato is quite a great deal. In fact, what I learned at the end of 2 years, I have given you within a few pages. So, you know, that is the advantage of a new generation. You get the benefit of your predecessors who have taken a long labor, they crystallize for you and give you. I had to plod a lot. I had no teacher to whom I could go and ask, give me a special lecture on Plato. I had to read a lot, understand his background. Even a few ideas which were there were very difficult for me to understand. And it took me time. And then I reflected on this for nearly 40 years. So you are getting the benefit of 40 years of reflection on what Plato has said. So it is good, even for me it is good, because you know, when you share your reflections with a group of people like you, you feel very happy. So it's for me all a profit. But now we have come to a point where I should right from the beginning tell you that now the passages are more difficult and climbing is difficult. If you like, you can go slowly, read only one paragraph or two paragraphs at the most, and go very slowly. That is one way. Or I switch over to another topic, similar one, and again come back afterwards when you are a little more trained in philosophical thinking. So I give a choice, and tell me what you feel inwardly. You know, it is like a steep climb, or you go down this and ultimately you come up. Both are alternatives, which are both are good. You go up, alright, fine. So let us see. Alright, then I'm very pleased. So now let us see on next page. You've got a text. Obviously, one feels here the limitations of Plato's theory. A self-existent which is non-existent is self-contradiction. It is inconceivable and therefore something that cannot be. If it is really non-existent, what is it that partakes of the ideas? And can the non-existent ever attain to being? Plato would say that perhaps it cannot, and it does not, and therefore it is neither being nor non-being, object not of knowledge but only of opinions. It is a mere appearance, but still, if it is an appearance, it must be, it must in some sense be. And if it is, it must be related to the ideas, and by that relation would form a unity of a total existence of reality. Now, this is a summary of what I told you yesterday. So this is not so difficult. Now, the next one, the next paragraph is slightly difficult. Let us see. There are several other difficulties too with respect to this theory. In fact, Plato himself is aware of them. And this is very interesting. It's not as if Plato was so unconscious that he allowed his own ideas without admitting his own defects. That is a mark of greatness. A great man saying, look, my own theory, which I've advanced, is defective. Indeed, we find that he puts in his Parmenides certain objections to his own theory of ideas. Parmenides is a title of one of his dialogues, where Parmenides is the main speaker. And Socrates is a younger man. So Socrates is expounding this theory of ideas, and Parmenides laughs at him and says, you are too young, you cannot, there are many difficulties in what you are saying. So actually Plato himself writing, it means that he is criticizing his own theory through the mouth of Parmenides. So it's the greatness of the philosopher. Now, the first argument relates to this question, whether the particular partakes of the whole idea or only of a part. Now let's concentrate on this. Does the particular partake of the whole idea or only of a part? Does a cat, partake of the whole idea of cattiness or only a part of the idea of cattiness? It's a very interesting question. If a cat is a cat, it must be wholly a cat. It can't be partly a cat and partly a lion. So the answer would be normally that if it partakes of the universal, it must partake of the whole of the universal. You can't see this partly a cat and partly not a cat. It is wholly a cat. And it can be only if the whole of cattiness is present in the cat. Only it's a one cat, but it partakes of the whole of cattiness. Right? This is the question that is put. The question is, does the part, particular, partake of the whole idea or a part of the idea? It is argued that if it is a former, one thing is at any place at one place, at once. If it is argued that the whole is partaken, then the same thing is present at many places. If you partake the whole of it, then the whole of it is there. Therefore, you are at many places. It seems to be strange, because we only see one cat at one place. But if he partakes of the whole of the idea, then wherever the idea is, that is, it must be present there also. Now, if it is the latter, the idea is divisible. And this is a very important question. Is idea divisible or indivisible? If partaking is only a part of the whole, then it means the whole is divisible. Some of the whole, some of cattiness is here, another part of cattiness is another cat, third part of cattiness is another part. So it means that the whole is divisible. And then he gives an example. And a thing which is a part of smallness will be smaller than the absolute smallness, which is absurd. Now this is an argument you have to grasp. In a sense it's very, very easy argument, but the expression of it is difficult. And therefore it may create difficulty in the mind. But let us read twice. If the letter means, if the particular partakes only of a part of the whole, that is the letter. If a particular partakes of a part of the whole, then what will happen? That you take the idea of smallness. Now smallness will be very, very, the idea of smallness will be very, very small, you might say. Now if the idea of smallness is partaken by small things, then that small thing will be smaller than the smallness. If a small thing partakes only of a part of smallness, then that small thing will be even less than smallness itself. And to be less than smallness is absolutely. Can there be smallest than the smallest? Can there be smaller than smallest? This is absurd. What can be smaller than smallest? Let us repeat the argument, both arguments, two alternatives. As I told you, we are passing through a steep climb. So we have to bear with the twists of the thought movement. Let us repeat the question. Does a particular partake of the whole of the idea, or does it partake only of a part of the idea? This is the question. You must write down this question quite clearly. Does a particular, in philosophy you should repeat the same sentence 10 times, because every sentence is a very precise sentence and has to be dealt with precisely. It's like a microscope. In science, sometimes it is easier to see the smaller things because you have a microscope and you can see with a microscope. But in philosophy, the same thing is difficult because ideas have to be seen only by ideas. We don't have a microscope to see an idea. So our mind should become microscopic. So now let us see, does a particular partake of the whole of the idea or only of a part of the idea? This is the question. And remember one simple example. Does a cat partake of the whole idea of cattiness, or a cat partakes only of a part of the idea of cattiness? This is an example. Does it partake of the whole idea of cattiness or a part of the idea of cattiness? It must be whole. That should be the real answer. So let us pursue that answer now. A prima facie, a cat is a cat because it partakes of the whole of cattiness. So that is a very obvious answer. Let us see and let us move forward. Now the argument is that if so, there are two consequences logically. One, if it is partaking of the whole, then the whole is at many places because there are many cats and each cat is partaking of the whole. This can happen only if the whole is at many places. But that is not admissible because according to Plato, the whole is only one. One can be at many places if there are many wholes. Cattiness partaken of here, another cattiness partaken of by another cat, a third cattiness partaken of by another cat. If the same whole is partaken of by so many, then this is the difficulty, that the same thing will be at many places. How can one thing be at many places? If wholeness is a thing, and if wholeness is partaken of by hundreds of cats, then wholeness must be at 100 places. So how can one thing be at the same time in 100 places? This is the difficulty. Of course there are catches in the argument, you will catch the argument. But I can tell you that how philosophically mind is exercised to its powder point. You can see that there is a catch in the argument, but you have to catch it. We should do it later on, not now. Just now we are only trying to understand the argument. If the whole is partaken of by every particular, then the whole must be at all the places where the particulars exist. That would mean that the same thing which is a whole, same thing is at many places. So one thing to be present at many places is absurd. Fine. We shall think over it again. We shall come back again. You know, philosophical arguments have to be thought over again by revisiting. You revisit the argument. There are philosophers who have revisited arguments even after 50 years. Some arguments are so subtle, it takes 50 years of your thinking over them and coming back again and then finding, oh my Lord, this is what you wanted to say. So we shall even take time to revisit them. But anyway, we should first of all register in the mind that there is an argument. And we have first to understand the argument properly and reflect on it. In Sanskrit we have a very beautiful word which is called nididhyasana. Nididhyasana. Nididhyasana means reflecting again and again and again and still again and yet again and further again. That is nididhyasana. Vichar is thinking. Nididhyasana is thinking again. You know, before you have sakshatkara, you have to do nididhyasana. That is shravana, manana, nididhyasana and sakshatkara. These are the 4 stages of realization. First you shravana, first you hear, then manana, you think over what you hear. Then nididhyasana, you repeatedly think again and again and again, you powder the idea, make it still settled and still subtler and still subtler, and then in a flash you realize, you grasp, you experience. Sakshatkara comes from the word aksha, something that meets your eye. Act, karan is an act, act in which sa akshar, something becomes, something meets your eye. You see, to see God eye to eye, as it were, face to face, to meet God face to face, that is sakshatkara. And then there is no doubt because you are seen directly. There is no doubt about God because you have seen God face to face. If I see Betina face to face, I say, I know Betina, no question. So that is sakshatkara. So this is a process of vidyasana we are doing. Repeat again and again.